Really? I have to admit, I'm a little jealous. The thought of going out on a date sounds so exciting, so free. Even if I were allowed to date, I'd have to take Kevin along. How creepy would that be? He's cute, Lacey starts. He has a car, and best of all, he's over 18. So no program? Right. He's so freaking normal, I'd say he was boring, but right now, I don't mind. He knows how to kiss. I laugh. I think that may be the real reason you like him. It's not funny, she says, tossing a rolled-up straw wrapper at me. Overusage of tongue is a serious problem. I think that's the real epidemic here. I'm cracking up. Kevin stands more alert from the side of the room as he watches us, but I can't stop. And yes, part of why I like him is his technique, but I have plenty of other reasons too. She grins. He's really nice to look at. Wow, I say. With so much in common, I think you may be soulmates. Oh, shut up. She laughs. I'll tell you one thing, she says, getting more serious. The minute I graduate, I'm out of this town, out of this state. I hear that back east, they've contained the outbreak without the program. Think of all the normal people who'll be walking around there. I widen my eyes. They've contained it? I didn't hear that. It's not mainstream news, she says, sipping from her drink. Total underground, but it's for real. She smiles. Maybe you'll come with me. I'd have to take Kevin with me, I say, motioning toward my handler. Lacey seems to consider this. He can come, she murmurs, running her gaze over him. I like blondes. Kevin notices us eyeing him. Lacey laughs and turns back to her cupcake. So, I ask a few minutes later, did you keep any friends from the program? Lacey shakes her head. Nope, they were all pretty lame. She glances up at me mischievously. Are you thinking of finding your friend, the one with benefits? He didn't have those kind of benefits, and yes, I'm thinking about it. Do you think I should? Do you think it could make me sick again? Lacey's expression darkens. I wish I knew what makes us sick, Sloane. But we don't know, and neither do they. I say you go find him. You deserve to live the life you want. There's a hint of tragedy in her voice, as if she's wondered about getting sick again before. Over Lacey's shoulder, I notice James Murphy watching us, and there's a twist in my stomach, both anxious and excited. Lacey must read it because she turns around and sees him, and then looks back to me. I knew you liked him. No, I don't, I answer quickly. It's just that he doesn't seem to want to talk to me, and to be honest, it makes him that much hotter. We both laugh. Well, trust me, she says, crumpling her wrappers. James may be hot, but he's a troublemaker. Someone like him could get you flagged again. So make sure you enjoy him for what he is, eye candy. She winks and then walks away. At the end of the day, I'm at my locker, but Kevin is nowhere in sight. I consider waiting for him, but then I realize I'm happy to be on my own. I hurry outside. It's my handler's responsibility to find me, not vice versa. It's a nice day out. The sun is warm in a cloudless sky, and I actually enjoy the walk. A few people look at me, as if realizing I shouldn't be unescorted, but they still say hi to me. It isn't until I'm a few blocks away that I realize how truly far my house is. Maybe I should call my mother for a ride. Hey, it's Sloane, right? I'm startled by the voice and turn to the street as a car slows next to me. I duck to look in the passenger window and abruptly stop on the sidewalk. Yeah, I'm James, he says. You know, the one you stare at in class. My cheeks warm, but I try to play it off. I don't stare at you. He smiles to himself, clearly knowing that I do. So, can I give you a ride somewhere? I'm embarrassed and not sure this is a good idea at all. Kevin had said to stay away from James, that he was on a self-destructive path. We're not supposed to talk to each other, I say.
Really? Well, if you'd like, we can drive in complete silence.
I laugh, adjusting the strap of my backpack on my shoulder. This is your car? I ask.
Nope. Does that mean you'll get in?
I shouldn't take rides from strangers, I say. James lowers his eyes, his playfulness fading. But, I continue, you seem harmless enough. He looks surprised.
I do?
No, you look like you're going to cause me a lot of problems. But it's a long walk home. I step off the curb and open the passenger door. He doesn't say anything as we pull away, and when we pass the turn for my house, I don't tell him. I clear my throat. Do you think they follow us? I ask.
Who?
The handlers. James taps his thumb on the steering wheel as he takes a left onto the main road, passing all the car dealerships and restaurants.
Yes, but not today. They all rushed off to the high school, some big incident they're trying to keep quiet.
Is that where my handler went? I thought he just got tired of me.
He definitely could have, James smiles. You seem like the pain in the ass sort, a twinkle in your eye. But more likely he was tasing someone in the hallway. He'll probably drive by your house later. They still drive by mine sometimes.
Oh. I honestly didn't know that Kevin drove by my house, and it makes me a bit uneasy. So what do you think they'll do if they see us together?
Nothing. What are they going to do, spank us?
He chuckles. They could put us back in
Sloan. James interrupts. Are you hungry? Maybe we could hit Denny's or something. I like pancakes.
People will see us at Denny's, I answer quietly.
Right, good point.
He turns to smile at me, but it seems strained, as if his confidence is just an act.
McDonald's drive-thru?
Why did you really offer me a ride home? I ask, my curiosity too much. James has ignored me since standing up for me at the wellness center, and now he's talking to me, driving me around. He shrugs.
I don't know.
Then why did you...
I really don't know. I don't want friends, Sloan. I just want to graduate and get the hell out of here.
He exhales, staring out the windshield.
And then you show up, watching me with your big brown eyes, looking at me like you know me.
I don't know you.
And I don't know you, so why did I care that that asshole was being mean to you outside on the patio that night? Why have I worried about you since? Can you explain it?
He sounds frustrated, and I realize that he has the same conflicting feelings that I do. Emotions that are there, but without cause. Feelings that aren't attached to memories and therefore meaningless. I'm suddenly scared, and think about James being high risk. I'm on Hillsdale Drive, I murmur. You passed my street a while back. James makes a sound like he's about to say something, but instead he makes a hard U-turn and drives us back in the direction of my house. He doesn't talk, and the tension grows. A pain starts to work through my body. A dread. An ache. I want to get far away from James Murphy, because I think he may be the cause of it. I feel sick. When he stops in front of my driveway, I move quickly to get out. I toss back a thank you and hurry toward my front door, glad my parents aren't home to see me so flustered. When I get on the porch, I glance over my shoulder. The car is still there. James is talking to himself and looking pissed. I pause right where I am as I watch him wipe roughly at his cheek and pull away. Chapter 6.
So I know you and James aren't at all into each other,
Lacey says, biting into her cupcake as she sits across from me in the cafeteria.
But he's been watching you this entire time. I might start feeling bad for him if you don't at least acknowledge him. I don't, keeping my back to his end of the cafeteria as I eat my lunch. James makes me self-conscious. His shifts between flirting and avoiding me are stirring up emotions I don't understand, and I don't want to get sick again.
Okay, Lacey says when I don't answer.
I'm just saying the more you ignore him, the more I'm convinced you're in love with the guy, and he looks positively pathetic today.
He does not, and I don't even know him, so how can I love him?
Lacey smiles as if I just told her that I want to marry him and have his blonde-headed babies.
Well, whatever you're doing, she says, you're messing him up hardcore.
I worry suddenly that she's right. What if by talking to him I started some chain reaction of events? What if we get infected again because of me? I put my chin on my shoulder and look back at James. When I do, he straightens. He holds my stare in a way that pins me in place until I hear Lacey calling my name, making me turn around.
Oh, Lord, she mumbles. This is not going to end well.
Let's just drop it.
Fine. She holds up her hands as if I'm a lost cause. I do have something for you, though.
This piques my interest.
Yeah? It's a little trick I learned a few weeks into my return.
With a cautious glance at Kevin, she reaches down to take something from her backpack. She taps my knee as she passes it to me under the table.
What is it?
I ask, bringing it onto my lap to look it over. It's a small pad of paper with the name of the school psychologist at the top. The entire pad has been filled out with his signature, requiring only the date and time. I look across the table at Lacey, my eyes wide.
If you need some time off, she whispers, just fill it in and give it to your teacher. They never check. They expect us to be in therapy. They definitely don't expect us to skip. We're the good ones, remember? Sorry that I have used up half the passes already.
When I look at her questioningly, she shrugs. What? How did you think I found the time to sample so many flavors? I laugh, thinking about Lacey sneaking around school, making out with guys behind the building or in the custodian's closet. And then, completely not meaning to, I take another look back at James. And he smiles.
Not interested at all, Lacey says offhandedly. So sure.
I don't waste any time using the pass. It's like having the key to an intricate lock right there in your pocket. Before my final class, I fill one out and then pause at the entryway, trying not to give myself away. After a deep breath, I turn to Kevin.
I actually have a session with Mr. Andrews, I say, motioning back toward the office. It'll probably last through the end of the day.
Kevin glances at his watch and then nods. I'll walk you there. I smile as my heart explodes with panic in my chest.
Oh, sure, okay.
Kevin waits as I show my teacher the fake pass, letting him mark me as present in the roster. Then he dismisses me. I don't talk as Kevin and I head down the empty hall toward the office. I don't know what I was thinking. My handler is going to see that I don't have a session, and then he's going to check the pass. I'm going to get so busted. I don't think he'll be able to ignore this, no matter what sort of favor he's doing for Realm. And where will I tell him I got it from? I won't turn Lacey in. They can put me back in the program if they have to. The program. An acute sense of dread slips over me, and I consider confessing to Kevin that I don't have a session, asking him not to turn me in. But that would just be stupid. I have to ride this out, and if that fails, deny, deny, deny.
You've done well, Kevin tells me as we walk. I'm honestly impressed with the progress you've made so far. Not all returners are so cooperative.
Thanks, I say, the pass burning a hole in my hand, proving that his trust is misplaced. I appreciate you saying that.
Realm told me you were remarkable in the program, and now I see it.
He pauses.
You know,
I was at your house that day. I was one of the handlers who brought you to the facility, he says softly. And you were really sick. I'm so glad to see you healthy now. I've really been pulling for you. I can feel the color drain from my face when he says this. You were there? Is all I can mumble. Oh, God. They took me from my own house? Kevin nods and puts his hand on my shoulder. I was. And when Realm contacted me about your release, I was hesitant. I didn't think you'd be a good candidate, but now I see it. You're very clever. Candidate for what? Kevin motions toward the office door as if reminding me that I have therapy. As he holds it open, he smiles. I'll have Realm get in touch with you soon, he says. I think that'd make you both pretty happy. I would love to see him. I'll see what I can do. He leaves, but I'm stunned, standing in the middle of the front office. Kevin has seen a side of me that I can't remember. He said I'd been really sick. I can't even picture it. Can I help you? The secretary asks, startling me. I look at her and then check back over my shoulder to make sure Kevin is gone. When I'm sure he is, I smile. Hi, I say. Mr. Bellis wanted copy paper? I hurry through the empty halls and stash the ream of paper in my locker. My heart is racing with the worry of getting caught, but I feel alive right now, as if I'm escaping more than just 50 minutes of class. I start toward the back door, hoping to sneak through it toward the far lot. When I get outside, I remember about the football field. Damn it, I murmur. Even though sports aren't played anymore, they've kept the lawn intact, even mowing it short. But it rained heavily last night, and the field looks half-flooded. It's the only way to the far lot unless I walk around the building, possibly getting seen by the front office. I sigh and move closer to the field to check it out. The air around me is warm from the sun. It smells new and clean, and I'm suddenly reminded of the times I spent camping with Brady. Sometimes it would pour rain and we'd be stuck in the tent, playing cards and eating beef jerky. It was still fun, though. We always had fun. As my sneaker squishes in the wet earth, I think about how much I miss Brady. It's like my memories of him end with us happy. Just happiness, and then he's gone. A quietness in its place. I wonder how I handled losing him. My mother said it was tough on me, but I wonder if I was brave. Or I wonder if his dying was what finally broke me. Sloane. I jump and spin around, nearly wiping out on the field as I see James jogging up, his cheeks pink from running. The sun reflects off his hair, casting him in gold. I hate how gorgeous he is. Are you trying to get me in trouble? I ask the minute he's in front of me, breathing hard. I look behind him to make sure no one's watching, but he just smiles. Define trouble. I shake my head and turn, starting across the field, even though my sneakers are getting sucked into the mud. Freaking hell, I say, trying to jump from grass patch to grass patch. So you skip class too? James asks. Obviously, but I don't try to get caught by yelling people's name across the field. Are you pissed because I had a mini breakdown in the car? I stop. And James bumps into the back of me, nearly sending me headlong into the mud. I grab for his shirt, and he grabs for my hand, and soon we're both off balance. When we're finally standing straight, our feet are practically on top of each other's, James holding me by the wrist. I worry that someone will see us like this. He shouldn't be this close, and he definitely shouldn't be looking at me like that. I have to go, I say, yanking away. Only when I do, James's foot slides in the mud, and then he's falling back, landing face up in a pile of mud. I am so sorry, I say, putting my hand over my mouth. But instead of jumping up and trying to clean himself off, James starts laughing hysterically. You did that on purpose, he says. You're so dead.
He gets up, trying to grab for me, but his knee slides and he ends up sprawling out on his stomach, covered in mud from head to toe.
Oh my God, he says. He rolls over and lands with a splat right next to my feet, and I can't stop myself from bursting out laughing.
You laughing at me? He asks, still staring up at the sky.
Yes, I say immediately. I absolutely am.
He lifts his head, mud smeared on his ear, and grabs my pant leg.
Oh, yeah?
Don't you dare.
He knots the jean fabric in his fist, yanking on it playfully.
Do you like getting dirty?
I will beat you senseless. I see where he's smeared mud on my clothing already. I'm afraid he might actually drag me down with him. I have no problem kicking your balls, I add.
He chuckles and pulls me again, making me stumble, but I correct myself before I fall.
Around us, the world smells like earth and life. I try to pull from his grasp without letting my other sneaker slip in the mud.
James, I say calmly, let me go, or I swear I'll scream.
Really? You would get me thrown back into the program?
And when I think about it, I know I wouldn't. I kick his hand and yank back, but my other sneaker flips out from under me, and I fall.
James swears and moves quickly, trying to catch me, but I'm face up in the mud before he can. The cool, mushy earth surrounds me as I catch my breath.
Sloan? James is kneeling next to me, looking concerned. I wasn't really going to pull you into the mud.
I stare back at him, my fingers digging into a clump of mud at my side.
James actually looks worried. He's such an idiot.
With a fierce right hook, I smash a handful of mud on the side of his face, catching him completely off guard as he falls to his side. The minute he's down, I start taking clumps of mud and grass and throwing them at him, burying him. He's laughing, bits of dirt on his teeth, before he sits up and lunges, tackling me.
You're nuts, he says. Oh, and I think you're hungry.
He's got me pinned, my ears half buried in the mud, blocking out the sound of his threats. He holds up a huge handful of mud, his own face covered nearly completely. He looks ridiculous, his blue eyes standing out against the dark dirt. He holds the mud over my face, little bits of dirty water dripping on my cheek.
You're going to eat this, he says.
Don't! I'm half laughing, half begging, trying to turn my face so he won't stuff the dirt into my mouth. James takes both my hands in one of his, pinning them over my head as he moves to straddle me, wiping the mud on my neck, smearing it with his fingers.
Ew, he says dramatically. This must feel so disgusting.
He shoves it down the front of my shirt. The mud is cold and slimy, and I turn from left to right, trying to get away from it, giggling the entire time.
You pushed me in the mud,
he says, grabbing another big handful from next to my face. Then you threaten my balls. I think you should pay, don't you?
No!
James lets my hands go, but doesn't get up. He's so proud of himself, having pinned a girl half his size, but I don't point this out. He exhales and throws the clump of mud off to the side, looking down at me as if he doesn't know what to do with me now.
You're a vicious little thing, James says as he finally crawls off me. You would have really hurt me if I let you.
His sneakers make a sucking noise as he stands up. When he holds out his hand to me, I look at it doubtfully.
Truce? He asks.
Whatever. I take his hand and let him help me up, even let him hold my arm as we make it across the muddy field, heading toward the back end of the parking lot.
You're filthy, he says, like it's a surprise, pausing at his car.
You should let me drive you home.
And what about our clothes? I ask, when I stop outside the passenger door. If it were my car, you'd have to ride home naked.
He smiles at the idea.
But since it's my dad's,
I don't care if it gets dirty. I decide to at least take off my cardigan, leaving the muddy tank top underneath. James takes off his shirt altogether, and I try not to notice. I have to try pretty hard. When we sit in the car and turn to each other, we both crack up.
"Maybe you could spray me down with your hose before I head home?" James asks, starting the car.
Like a dog.
"You can scratch my belly if you want."
Gross. When we get to my house, my parents are just climbing out of their car. I forgot it was their support group day, and they'd be home early. As we stop at the curb, James laughs.
"Good thing you didn't really ride home naked."
Not sure this is much of an improvement. I flip down the mirror and see my mud-covered skin and then glare at James.
"I think you're a bad influence," I tell him.
He grins.
"I hope so."
I shake my head and start to open the door. "It might be weird if I spray you down on my front lawn while my parents watch," I say. "Although you strike me as an exhibitionist."
"Oh, I am. But that's fine. I'll wash up at home."
I get out, but before I close the door, James calls my name.
"What?"
I ask, a smile teasing my lips.
"It was a good day," he says simply.
"Thanks." I agree, then close his door, watching as he drives off. I almost wish I'd stayed in the car. That was nice. In a really strange and dirty way.
"Sloane?"
my mother calls, her voice tight. When I turn, the looks on my parents' faces are almost comical in their confusion.
"Sorry," I say, although I don't sound it. "I fell in the mud and James brought me home."
"James?" my mother says, exchanging a concerned glance with my father. It stops me cold.
"What?"
I ask. "It's just..." My mother pauses as if debating something.
"Sloane, you're not supposed to date after..."
"Oh, we're not," I say quickly. "It's not like that." My mother lets out a held breath.
"That's good. We just want to keep you safe, honey."
Her tone is tense, but rather than press her, I go inside to clean up. I don't want to ruin my first fun day in what seems like forever. Or at least, the first one I can remember. Chapter 7. I'm surprised when I wake up the next morning to find Kevin waiting at my front door. I thought we'd gotten past the escorting me to school stage of our relationship.
"What's going on?" I ask.
"We just want to make sure you're not doing anything to jeopardize your health, Sloane," my mother says calmly. "So I've asked Kevin to watch you a little more closely." I step back from her, as if I've been slapped in the face.
"You called the handler on me?"
I turn to Kevin. "And what did she say? That I was smiling too much?"
Kevin bristles. "She said you were riding around with James Murphy. Is that true?"
My first instinct is to deny it, but I know there's no use.
"So? We're friends."
My mother tisks next to me as if I'm confirming her fears. Kevin tilts his head like he's disappointed.
"This is your warning, Sloane," he says firmly. "You're not to have contact with Mr. Murphy anymore. Do you understand?"
Kevin looks completely serious, and I think that I've killed whatever bond we had. He doesn't trust me anymore, and like he'd told me before, his main objective is to keep me well, not to help me break the rules.
"Yes," I say to Kevin, the bitterness clear in my voice.
I look over at my mother then, anger rolling over me.
"I just got home, and already you're trying to get rid of me?"
The minute the words are out, I regret them as her face falls. But instead of apologizing, I straighten my back and walk out, leaving Kevin to trail behind me. My handler takes the seat next to me in math class, blocking my view of James. I'm so surprised by Kevin's change in demeanor that I don't bother talking to him. He's like a real handler now. I wonder if James has been warned as well, especially with how severe a reaction Kevin is having. Then again, if they'd ordered James to stay at least 50 feet away from me, it'd probably make him want to talk to me more, so I smile. I'd thought that maybe he was a jerk or difficult, but after yesterday, I feel light, as if James reminded me what it was like to have fun again. After class, I walk down the hallway with Kevin carrying my books like I'm helpless, when my phone vibrates in my pocket. I'm not sure who would text me other than my mother, and I definitely don't want to talk to her. But then I see James down the hall, leaning against the lockers. He's got a phone in his hand, twisting it between his fingers as if he's waiting for something. "I have to run to the bathroom," I say to Kevin, catching him by surprise. "But does the program limit how many times I can relieve my bladder now?" I ask. Kevin smiles. "No," he says, "that still belongs to you. I'll wait for you, though." He stands at my locker, and I cross the hall, rushing into the girls' bathroom. Once inside a stall, I take out my phone. "I think you have an admirer. He looks good in white." I don't recognize the number, but I know it's James. I lean against the wall and respond, "Well, apparently you're bad news. Not supposed to talk to you again, ever." I bite my lip, wondering how he'll answer. If he'll say that maybe they're right, that we shouldn't be around each other. But my phone vibrates instantly. "Yeah, that's probably not going to happen. Want to skip out?" I laugh, thrilled at how quickly he dismissed the idea. "How?" "I'll distract your boyfriend. Meet at my car in 10. God, James is going to get me flagged. But at the same time, I can't help it. I really, really want to leave with him right now. And my mother, how dare she turn me in? I'm so mad at her, I almost want to get caught just to spite her. But I push that idea away, knowing that I don't want to go back to the program. I couldn't do it again, especially without Realm. I close my eyes, my heart racing in my chest. I want to go with James. But it's too early to use another pass. They'll be suspicious. "I can't right now," I type back. "Another time?" James doesn't answer right away, and I worry that he's annoyed or that he's already started some elaborate plan to get us out. I wonder how much longer I should wait when a message pops up. "Another time." "Your handler looks like he's got a stick up his ass today," Lacey says. She reaches into her lunch bag, but instead of taking out cupcakes, she holds a shiny red apple. When she sees me notice, she bites into it. "Need to watch my figure." "You look great," I tell her, but she waves me away. "Don't try to change the subject," she says. "What did you get busted for? I've seen him crowding you today." I sigh. "It might have been because I was with James Murphy yesterday, and when he dropped me off, he was shirtless and covered in mud, but nothing happened." "Clearly." I smile, but soon it fades as I think about how Kevin found out. "My mother betrayed me," I say quietly. "She called the handler on me." "Whoa," Lacey says. "That's pretty harsh." We don't talk for a while as I pick at my food and Lacey polishes off her apple. When we're both done, she meets my eyes from across the table. "I'm sorry," she says. "I don't know what I'd do if my parents did something like that to me. It's..." She exhales. "I'm just sorry." I smile gratefully and let the conversation ease back into normal things. Lacey is going out of town this weekend with her new, older boyfriend. I'm a little envious, but I'm glad she seems happy. I run my eyes over the cafeteria until I find the spot where James always sits, but today the seat is empty. James is nowhere in sight. My mother doesn't speak to me at dinner, which is just as well because I don't want to talk to her. My father looks between us helplessly, But neither me nor my mother bother to explain. When I'm done, I dump my plate in the sink and go to hide out in my room. I read over James's texts a dozen times, thinking that he's definitely flirting. He made it sound like they couldn't keep him away from me, and that in itself is incredibly romantic. Unless I'm reading too much into it, which is entirely possible. Maybe he just likes the challenge of getting around the program. Or maybe he just wants to piss them off. I wonder how he got my number. Like Realm, he might break into things, steal files. I definitely wouldn't put it past him. James is bad. And that makes him sort of good. There's a noise from downstairs, like a plate breaking. It startles me, and I turn toward my door. My father's voice is loud, carrying up the stairs as he tells my mother to stop, that she's causing it. I hold my breath when he says that it's her fault. Are they talking about me? I've never heard my parents argue before, but it feels familiar somehow. Tears begin to well up in my eyes as emotions flood me, emotions I can't remember, and yet they hurt. They sting. My mother's voice is barely audible from here, so I ease to the door to listen more closely. Then it hits me, a sudden pain in my head. I moan against it, staggering back. It's like a screwdriver to my frontal lobe, and I nearly collapse. Am I having an aneurysm? Am I dying? I don't know what's happening, and I'm terrified as I try to get to my door to call for help. Then an image fills my mind, a brightly colored memory among all the foggy ones. I see myself holding something in my hands, lifting my mattress, and stuffing objects in a slit there. There's a slit in my mattress? The pain fades to a dull ache, and I collapse against my closed door, trying to catch my breath. Is it possible that I remembered something? I slowly climb to my feet and walk around the side of the bed. I get down on the floor. I lift the heavy mattress. I feel around underneath it, disappointed when I find nothing. I'm about to drop the mattress when I brush a bulge under the fabric. My heart leaps with anxiety and excitement. I duck my head down to look, my arms starting to shake with the weight. And I see it, a small slit cut in the fabric. It's real. I rest the corner of the mattress on my shoulder and pull out the objects. What the hell? There's a plastic purple ring and the white backing of a picture. Why are these in my bed, and why do I remember hiding them? I drop the mattress and then sit on it, setting the ring aside as I flip the picture over. When I do, shock floods my body. It's a picture of Brady, possibly just before he died, but I don't remember. And next to him with his arm around him, is James. James from my math class is standing with my dead brother, smiling. Chapter 8. From the doorway of our near-empty classroom, I see James sitting at his desk, his notebook open as he appears to be drawing. I turn and look at my handler. "I forgot my book," I say, having left it in my locker on purpose. "Any chance you could grab it for me? I don't want to be late." I walk purposely toward my seat in the front, pausing there as if reminding Kevin that he's already taken care of my problem of over-socialization. He nods and says he'll be right back. But the minute he's through the door, I stomp over to James's desk. He doesn't look up, just continues to shade in the picture of a figure with long, curly hair that he's been drawing in his notebook. I pull the picture of him and Brady from my pocket and slam it down on his open page, startling him. He sits back in his chair, staring up at me. "What the hell?" "How did you know my brother?" I ask, poking hard at his image on the picture. James's blue eyes are confused, and when he looks down at the picture of him and Brady, he pales considerably. James pulls the picture from under my hand and examines it. I've never seen this before, he says. And my brother? James swallows hard. I don't know him.
Then why are you at the river together? Why is your arm over his shoulder? My God, were you friends with him?
James continues to study the picture and then hands it to me, rubbing roughly at his face. Go back to your seat before the handler comes in, he says, no emotion in his voice.
I need to know if you...
Later, he snaps. Now go. James's face is hard, and I know he's not going to tell me anything more right now. Our teacher enters the room, and I stuff the picture into my pocket and hurry toward the front, angry that I'll have to wait for answers. Just as I slide into my chair, Kevin walks back in and lays the book on my desk. He goes to the back to stand watch, making sure no one interferes with me. But I feel like I've already started to unravel. I haven't told Lacey about the picture, intent on confronting James first. Could that be why he's really been talking to me? Did he have something to do with my brother's death? I feel deceived, and I'm not even completely convinced I should, not if James doesn't know the answer either. But more than anything, it's almost like I can get part of my brother back. I just need James to fill in the gaps in my memory. I barely pick at my food and nod at Lacey at all the right times. I wait for James to sit at his table, but he doesn't come to lunch again. I want to scream and run out looking for him. Glancing over at Kevin, I see him chatting with a teacher, and I take out my phone. I scroll through to find James's last message and hit reply. I want to talk. Now. I hold my breath, setting my phone on the table as I wait for him to respond. I glance at the clock and see there are only 10 minutes left of lunch. My fingers are actually trembling. The phone vibrates, and I nearly knock over my Diet Coke trying to get to it.
Holy hell, Sloan, Lacey says. You doing okay?
Fine, I tell her, and pull up the message.
Basement, near storage room.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like a fantastic idea. I wonder if he wants to get caught. I take another cautious look at Kevin.
What's going on? Lacey asks seriously, leaning toward me. You're doing something devious. I can see it in your eyes.
I need to get out of here, I whisper.
Tell me about it.
No, I mean, I need to get out right now. Do you think I can?
Oh.
She peeks over her shoulder, finding my handler still talking with the teacher. Lacey nods her chin to the back stairwell. There, she says. If you move quickly, he won't notice the door open. I bite my lip, not sure if I can get away with this, wondering how long it'll take Kevin to find me. But then I decide that I have to take the chance. Hey, I tell her, smiling weakly. If I get dragged away... Try and remember me, okay?
You got it. Now go.
I back out of my chair, walking slowly and calmly toward the exit. When I'm close, I look at Kevin. His back is to me. My heart racing, I escape the cafeteria. The storage room door is heavy, and it creaks when it opens. It's freaky, and I debate whether I should be in here at all. It's dark. Over here. James's voice comes from the corner, desks and old boxes stacked around him. I can't see him well, but I keep moving. When his hands touch my upper arms, I jump, making a soft sound. Sorry, he says. I can't find the light. I stare until his outline starts to come into focus, the place so dark it's like we're the only people in the world. God, I'm an idiot for being here. I cross my arms over my chest, even though he can't see me. Just then, the room fills with light, and I find James near the wall with his hand on the switch. When he looks at me, my expression is deadly serious. How do you know Brady? I ask. I told you that I don't. I've never seen him before. Did you ask him? His words sting, and I step back, the air pushed from my lungs.
Well, did you?
He asks.
James, I say, the tears thick in my voice. My brother is dead. And the fact that he doesn't know him, that my brother is gone from his memory, makes me break down. Seeing the picture has stirred up the pain, the grief I must have felt but don't remember. I put my face in my hands, and then suddenly, James pulls me to him as I quietly sob into his shirt.
"I'm so sorry," he says. "I had no idea. I'm an asshole, okay?"
"You are," I agree, but don't move away. I'd wanted James to know Brady. I wanted him to tell me about him. And now it's like I've lost my brother all over again.
"Stop crying," James says softly. "You can't go back to class like that."
"I'm not going back," I say, straightening from his arms. "I hate this place. I hate everything."
"Believe me, Sloan," he says, "I can relate. But I don't want you to do anything stupid. How do you plan on getting out?"
James tucks my hair behind my ears. I let him, but lower my eyes.
"Not sure." "I can help," he offers. "I've made skipping class into a fine art. I have the clearance code of a program doctor. The office won't know it's expired unless they check into it and see he's retired."
"Really?"
I sniffle and wipe at my cheeks. "I'm not an amateur," he says. "Technically, I'm at therapy right now. But if I sneak you out, do you want to grab lunch or something? I'm starving."
I wait, still wanting to be mad at him for not knowing my brother, but realistically knowing it's not his fault.
"It depends," I murmur.
"On what?"
Do you think we can get our memories back?" I ask.
"No," he says sadly. "I've asked everyone, researched it, and from what I can tell, no." His voice takes on a hard edge, and I like it. I like the anger there.
"But do you want to try?" I ask. "You can come by my house, look at Brady's stuff, and see if you remember anything."
"Will you make me a sandwich?" I smile.
"Yeah, I guess."
James is quiet, and I think he's going to refuse, but then he takes out his phone and dials, dissolving into the voice of an old man, pretty expertly, I must admit. And when he's done, he looks nervous, as if coming with me might start something he's not sure of. But we leave anyway, together.
"Your parents coming home anytime soon?" James asks as we pause on my back porch.
There is a tiny burst of butterflies, even though I try not to notice them. "No, not for a little while."
Kevin had rushed off campus after James called in an emergency at the other high school, so luckily I didn't have to lie to his face. The office bought the phony call without question. I'm almost scared at how good James is at getting around the rules.
"Will they be able to tell if we go through their stuff?" James asks as we step inside my cluttered kitchen. The pots from last night's dinner are still on the stove, dishes next to the sink.
"I hope not." I push the door closed behind us and lock it. James looks around the room, taking it in, and then glances back at me.
"Familiar?" I ask.
He shakes his head. "Sorry. No." I'm definitely disappointed as I lead James upstairs, wishing he could tell me what he knows about Brady. I want to find out if he has any details about how my brother died, how I survived it. But he's nothing short of confused as he follows behind me. We pause at a door.
"This was my brother's room," I say quietly. Tears start to itch behind my eyes, but I blink them away.
James passes me and walks inside, looking over the room as if he's hoping it'll just hit him. But as the minutes tick by, it seems less and less likely. When his blue eyes finally meet mine, the apology is in them. I turn and walk out into the hallway.
It doesn't seem real, how part of our lives can just be wiped out.
How James and I can share a connection and yet not even know what it is. He knew Brady. How could he forget him? I'm starting down the hall, James behind me, when I hear him stop.
Your bedroom?
I turn and see him standing at my door.
Yep. Can I see it?
Why?
Just curious.
I should say no and lead him out before my parents get home, but it's nice having him around. It's nice knowing I'm not the only person feeling helpless. James walks into my room and wanders around, looking through the pile of junk on my dresser, testing the softness of my bed. When he sees me watching him, he smiles.
I know I'm loathsome. You don't have to say it.
I'll try not to.
He laughs then and gets up. Can I see the picture again? He asks.
I'm leaning against the doorframe when I take the photo out of my jeans, and then James is right in front of me.
Close.
He takes the picture from my hand, studying my face as he does. My breath catches, and I don't say anything.
He looks like you, James murmurs, glancing again at the image.
We were related. But my heart isn't into the sarcasm, and it just comes out sad. James seems to notice.
I'm sorry he's gone, he whispers, examining me once again. And I'm sorry I don't remember.
It breaks my heart to hear him say that. I don't even know if he and Brady were that close, but the ache that I have tells me that they had to be. Without thinking, I lean forward and hug James, making him stagger backward against the other side of the doorway. At first, his hands are awkwardly at my hips as I rest my head on his chest. His arms wrap around me protectively, the shock of his touch almost jarring in its comfort.
I'm sorry, I say suddenly and straighten up.
I back away, not sure there is anything I can tell him to make the impromptu affection less awkward. But James grabs my wrists and pulls me to him again, this time hugging me tightly like he's the one who needs it. We stand like that, his heart pounding against mine. James rests his hand under my hair at the back of my neck.
I like this, he says.
And it's weird because we don't really know each other, but... He trails off, and I don't try to fill in the words for him because I know what he means. Me and him, together like this. It's the strangest feeling, full of things I don't understand, both comfort and agony. But the one thing I am sure of is that I feel safe.
James, I say.
Sloane? I think we've done this before. I'm so certain, and yet I'm not sure what to think about it. How can I feel so close to someone I don't know? A long silence passes, and then James moves me back, his hand still on my neck.
I should go, he says. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
His face is a mask of uncertainty, and I wish I hadn't said anything, hadn't insinuated that we'd been more than friends. He looks completely freaked out.
I'm sorry, I start to say, but he shakes his head.
You have absolutely nothing to be sorry about, he answers, sounding kind.
Polite.
He turns then, walking out into the hall. And all I can do is follow him. My eyes are stinging with the start of tears. I don't want him to leave. When he gets to the back door, he pauses, holding it open, but not looking back.
I really am sorry about your brother, Sloane, he says.
Then I don't have time to answer before he leaves me standing alone in my kitchen.
Chapter 9. I lie in my bed, the purple ring on my finger. Why would I save something like this? It's just a cheap plastic ring. I bring my hand closer, praying for some clarity. But it doesn't come. Turning on my side, I examine the picture again.
It makes my heart ache to see how happy Brady looks, and to know I'll never see that expression again. And next to him is James, just as carefree. I'm confused and hurt by how James treated me today. I don't understand if I said something wrong, pushed him too far. I thought he was having the same feelings, but I guess not. I can't wrap my brain around his behavior, and more than that, I feel rejected. I'm just looking for what I lost. I avoid James when I go back to school, which is just as well since Kevin seems to be constantly at my side. I half expect to find him in the bathroom with me when I brush my teeth at night. But when I hit week two of recovery, he pulls me aside in the hallway after math class. "Here," he says, handing me a small piece of paper. I look down at the address on it, and then at him. "Michael will be waiting for you." Kevin nods toward the paper. "But Sloan," he says cautiously, "they've pulled me off your case. I'm not sure if you'll get a new handler or what is going on. That's why I'm giving you Michael's contact info." He exhales then, as if he's truly sad to leave me here. And although I'm glad to not have him watching me anymore, I hope they don't give me another handler. "Be careful," Kevin whispers as he backs away, watching me until he turns to leave. I wait a beat. Kevin seems nervous about something, but Realm will know what's going on. He always seems to know everything. "Sloan?" I'm staring blankly into my locker when he says my name. James is next to me, and I immediately roll my eyes. "Go away," I say. "I'm not in the mood for your hot and cold affection today."
"You're saying you want my affection?"
He grins, but I don't return it. "Look," I tell him. "Just because I said that I thought we'd," I lower my voice, "comforted each other before, doesn't mean I was propositioning you. You didn't have to run off and make me feel stupid like that." His smile fades.
"I know."
I wait, but he doesn't expand. "You know? Wow, thanks for the apology. It's nice talking with you, James." I move to walk away, but he reaches out to take my elbow.
"Wait," he says quietly. "Don't be mad. I have my reasons."
"And you don't care to share them?"
"Not really. But maybe I'm not as tough as you think." I'd say he was repeating some cheesy line he'd heard in a movie, except for the fact that he looks miserable when he says it. I gently take my arm from his grasp before people notice.
"So what do you want now?" I ask him seriously.
"I wish I knew, Sloan. But I am interested in finding out more about your brother. About you. I mean, we could have all been friends."
I nod. "You looked pretty happy in the picture. I just wish we could get our memories back." It occurs to me then that Realm might know what to do. He's always been one step ahead, always known more about the program than anybody. "There is someone," I say. "He was my friend in the program, and he's really smart. He might know what to do." James looks me over as if trying to decipher some secret code, but then he shrugs.
"Okay, who is he?"
"His name is Realm, and I have his address. I'm going to show up and see if he can help."
"Sounds like a terrible plan."
"Got a better one?"
James laughs. "Sloan, I never have a plan. Tell you what, how about you sneak out of your house tonight and meet me on the corner of Baron and Elm? I'll drive you to your boyfriend's house."
Realm's not my boyfriend, but I decide not to deny or acknowledge it. I agree to meet James at the corner at 6, but I can see the uncertainty in his eyes, as if he's still trying to figure out who Realm is to me. And I leave him like that, glad to let him wonder about me for once. The house is set back from the street, hidden down a long gravel driveway behind large trees. As we pull up, the rocks crunch under the tires, and I take in how isolated it looks. A small wood-shingled house surrounded by a forest, a few dead flowers in the beds.
"You sure you know this guy?" James asks. "This looks like a..."